I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Our discussion may raise some questions in your mind, and I really want to hear from you, our listeners. So connect with me on LinkedIn or Twitter, and please share this episode with your colleagues and friends. It would also mean a great deal to us if you'd leave a review on iTunes, because that would help others find our show. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Yarrow Starak. Yarrow is the author of the blog Profits Blueprint and founder of the EntrepreneursJourney.com blog. Yarrow began blogging over 10 years ago, initially as a hobby. However, as his income from blogging surpassed $10,000 a month, he decided his future lay in this new publishing medium. Since then, Yarrow has mentored thousands of other experts, authors, coaches, consultants, speakers, and trainers how to turn their expertise into a profitable online business. Today, Yarrow helps people set up their own blog sales funnel, a system that combines blogging with email marketing, to build a platform to sell your own digital training products. Yarrow has a proven track record of results, with his graduate bloggers going on to make thousands of dollars, some even millions, in such diverse niches as book design, ADHD counseling, acne treatment, BMX bikes, skiing, cars, sports news, speed reading, real estate, television production, and fat loss. It's quite a range. Yarrow, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to this discussion.
So I wonder if we could start off by you talking a little bit about why you started Entrepreneur's Journey.
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, initially, like you introduced me there, it really was a blog designed to be a hobby. But to be absolutely honest, it was actually born from an experiment I had done for the business I was running prior to blogging. So just to take a step back, for me, my sort of entrepreneurial journey began in 1998 when I was 18 years old in Brisbane, Australia, and I had enrolled at the University of Queensland in a business management degree. I can't say the degree did much for me, but enrolling in university gave me my first access to the internet. That's when I was given a dial-up account. So I fell in love with the internet, and that led to starting my first website, which was actually a card game website about Magic the Gathering. And I made a little bit of money from that eventually after, you know, learning about how to do anything online. I started selling cards. I had a little community there, but I wanted to take things a more serious level with the business. So I actually started an editing company around the year 2000 called Better Edit. So it was an online editing and proofreading business where I was the middleman connecting university students with PhD graduates, professors at university to do editing, academic editing. And that business did well. It was my first full-time income. I continued to grow it after graduating from university. And it was while running that business that someone suggested to me that I should start a blog, because blogs are great for getting traffic for free from what was becoming the dominant search engine at the time, Google. So I went and tried to figure out what a blog was. I didn't really understand what made a blog different from a website, a traditional website. So I decided to create a blog for this editing business, and I launched that, and that was the experiment to see whether it would bring in traffic. And I attempted to write about subjects I thought would bring in my target customer. So things for university students, which frankly was really hard because I didn't find that an interesting subject at all. It was quite boring. So I wrote that blog for 3 months in late 2004, and it actually did work. Like, it started to bring in traffic for my editing company. I learned what makes a blog, and I started to enjoy this process of writing at least. But I noticed I didn't like writing about the subject of editing and proofreading, but I did enjoy writing about running a business. So that's why I then, in January 2005, said, you know what, I'm going to stop this editing blog, but I'm going to start a new blog. It's going to be a hobby. I registered Entrepreneurs-Journey just because I wanted to tell my own entrepreneur's journey, not thinking it would become my business. Frankly, it's a bit of a bad domain name. It's got a hyphen in it. It's got a word that's hard to spell. But I love the idea of explaining what I had done in the last 7 years with my two other businesses and everything else. I had some other projects that had started and stopped. And then what I was currently focusing on, so growing my editing company, thinking about new businesses, and eventually also more internet marketing related subjects, like, well, everything really, you know, from pay-per-click advertising to banner advertising to strategic thinking, anything and everything that I was thinking about as an entrepreneur. And that's how that blog got started. And it was a lot of fun because I literally just got to talk about what I was enjoying as an entrepreneur at the time. Eventually I had to find a focus because I decided I wanted to make it, you know, a teaching business, essentially turning it into a business that sells courses and ebooks and a subscription community, that sort of thing. So I had to kind of find a direction for my teaching products. But the blog was and is still today essentially a place for me to share my own entrepreneur's journey and the journey of other entrepreneurs through my podcast. I run a podcast as well. So that's pretty much what it's been for the almost 11 years now that it's been running.
So this actually raises a bunch of questions in my mind. The first one, Yarrow, is back in 2004, you took somebody's advice to write a blog when they were probably fairly early in their evolution. How do you know? Because we all, as entrepreneurs, we all get lots of advice. We're always seeking advice. How do you know whose advice to follow?
Well, to be frank, that friend was just someone who worked at another marketing company. By no means was he an expert. He knew kind of like what I knew. We were all playing around with ideas. I think
that's exactly my point. We get advice from all kinds of places.
Right.
Right. So how do you know which one may lead to something and which one probably won't?
Well, I can tell you at that point in time, I had no concrete answer to that question other than let's hope this works. I've seen it work for other people. But at the same time, I could have made the decision to focus 100% on Google AdWords, which was working tremendously well for people at the time too. Or I could have focused on, you know, banner advertising, or there was all kinds of different marketing methods available to me. I think blogging appealed because I was a publisher. You know, for me, having a card game website prior to that, which was kind of, wasn't a blog, but it was like a magazine. And blogging seemed very similar to running a magazine. So I just went with partially my gut, partially my strengths. I felt writing was something I was, you know, comfortable doing. I didn't see myself as a writer, so to speak, but I certainly had no problem in the past writing to my card game website and so on. So the decision was made just as an experiment. Like, I couldn't tell you that I had any sound data to back it up at the time, bearing in mind, you know, I was 23, 24, and I was throwing things against the wall at that time, right? Like, almost anything that worked for me was because I tried 6 things and 5 didn't work and 1 did. So I just kept doing the 1 that did. Blogging was just in that mix at the time. And I generally gravitated to tools that I felt I was enjoying the process of using. And I never liked pay-per-click advertising because it was full of number crunching and I wasn't a numbers person. So for me, it was an obvious decision to go where the words were, in this case, which was blogging.
So do what you enjoy, play to your strength, and at the same time, there's an element of going with your gut in what it is you're going to pursue. But I was also hearing that you try something for so long, and if it's not working, you move on to the next thing. Mm.
Yeah, you know, you don't hear the stories of the things you do that don't work. You know, like, okay, so I started a blog and that worked, but, you know, I started 3 or 4 other websites in the years around that time. I did do a little bit of pay-per-click marketing because other people were promoting how easy it was to make money, and I sort of got caught up in the shiny object syndrome with that as well. For me, I think all of these things that don't work experiences are a process of figuring out your path, so to speak. You know, for me, it's harder to figure out what's going to work without having done something that doesn't work, because, you know, it's a process of elimination. When you start knocking down all the boxes of the things that don't work, you're left with what's working, hopefully, right? Mm-hmm. Eventually. So that's what a lot of, certainly my early days, you know, it's a bit different today since we have so many examples, we have so much knowledge and prior training that people have delivered and been through. They've had experiences, so they go out there and share these experiences. So I wouldn't do it as haphazardly as I did it a decade plus ago today, simply because there's just more established paths to walk. But I still think what you said before is the right advice. Go with what your strengths are you know, because you need to spend a bit of time, especially if you're an entrepreneur with limited resources and you're going to be the one implementing the marketing technique, you better enjoy the process of getting effective and proficient at that technique. If you don't enjoy the process, you're probably not going to follow through enough to make it work. So that's still a big part of the decision-making process, I believe, for anyone who's starting any kind of business.
Mm-hmm. And then how do you know how long to keep at something before you determine it's time to pivot?
You know, I get this question a lot with my coaching clients because, you know, they're starting a new blog, they pick this subject, doing some research, but then they're maybe not getting the traction they want. And it's 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 6 months. And I start to get asked, when do I pivot? When do I throw in the towel with this subject, start a new one? Because you get conflicting advice. You're told you have to push through this startup phase, hustle, try to build some momentum. And then, you know, the flywheel starts turning and it kind of carries itself a bit more versus hitting your head against the brick wall and never getting anywhere. So you should stop and pivot. And I always answer that question to my clients by asking them, first of all, you know, what have you done to actually test this? Because a lot of people make that decision having never done any kind of prolonged effective marketing to see whether there's an audience that actually responds to what they're doing. So if they come back to me and say, you know, I've written a bunch of content and I've done some research and maybe I had a couple conversations, but they've never actually gone and built a channel of traffic to their content to see if they could, you know, build an email list, then they haven't got the data to conclude whether it's working or not working. So at the very least, put something out there, get some traffic in front of it, get some traffic in front of your opt-in boxes, your landing page, and really test that metric. Are you getting email conversions? You know, are people coming to your content and going, I want more, opting into the email? And then, obviously, step two is, are they engaging with your emails? And step three, are they actually picking up an offer, you know, buying a product, or in the case of a lot of my clients, signing up initially for some sort of coaching to begin with, and then maybe later on doing some sort of digital training. So for me, the question could only be answered first by looking at your effort. And then if you've done that, so let's say, you know, someone came to me and said, yes, I actually, you know, did a whole bunch of guest posts. I've had this much traffic come to my blog. I maybe did a bit of Facebook advertising. You know, I ran a joint venture webinar and I got 100 people signed up for the webinar and, you know, no one attended or no one signed up for the product I sold. You start to get more meaningful metrics to draw conclusions from. So I really think, you know, that's the ultimate decider, is if the audience decides for you. If you haven't put something in front of an audience, you don't have a metric other than your own gut feeling, your own motivation. And unfortunately, that's often an area where people will give up before they should, because they personally just, for whatever reason, they don't want to do it anymore. It doesn't conclude that it would not work, but for them, that's just not the path. So there's two things going. There's market realities, and there's the emotional condition, the emotional state of the entrepreneur. And you have to try and, you know, find the balance to get people to follow through, to get to the point where they can even reach a viable conclusion based on data.
Mm-hmm. Is there an example or a story you might want to share about someone who hasn't really done the market testing properly and they've made a shift, and then after testing properly, they've seen better results?
Yeah, I probably shouldn't mention names just because I'd have to want to ask them first. But there's two examples I'll give you which are really interesting, because one has led to a hugely successful business and the other one is still got a successful business today. But I'll give you the example. So way, way back when I first started, I actually was working a part-time job at the same time I was blogging, way back in that sort of early 2000s, 2004, 2005. And my friend wanted to start blogging too, and he didn't know what subject to dive into and basically start a business about. So he decided to start three, about the three subjects he cared about the most, which at the time were cars, the Windows Vista operating system, for those who might remember that way back 2005, and going out for dinner. So basically a restaurant review style business website blog in his hometown, in our town of Brisbane. So he started all three blogs at the same time, and the car blog did really well. The restaurant site did moderately well, and the Windows Vista blog just crashed and burned. So immediately there was an indication simply from the traffic going to the sites which one was getting the most traction. Now, he eventually dropped everything but the car blog. And today that site is called caradvice.com.au. It's a $20 million business with a team of employees, investors, CEO, you know, all that sort of thing down in Australia. And that's an example of starting off experimenting that way. I don't necessarily recommend following in his footsteps because three at the same time is just hard to do. A different, probably more relevant example for what you're talking about now is I had one of my clients in my program. She started off like a lot of people do by coming into the world as a coach and sort of saying, listen, I can help you with, you know, an aspect of running a business. And she did well enough in the sense that she was getting some clients. She was a high-priced coach. So she was, you know, charging that sort of $5,000 to $10,000 a client package. And she got traction, got some customers, but she kind of, I guess, as your name of your podcast, she kept hitting this wall, this plateau, where she, you know, a client would drop off, she had to find another one. And she was working hard and she really wanted to have more digital products so that there was more passive or near passive income coming in. And she tried to launch a training program. It just didn't really catch on. And she started to get some interesting feedback, though, from some of her clients and even just people who weren't her clients, but people who were subscribing to her world, basically following her blog, following her podcast, following her videos and so on. And they were really just in how she was getting aspects of her business done for her through outsourcing, through contractors in the Philippines. So as she noticed more and more of that sort of questions coming through, she decided to test basically to her existing audience. That was the good thing. She, you know, maybe her business wasn't perfect, but she built an audience so she could do almost like a test of a potential pivot by saying, listen, I'm thinking of launching a service to help match you and provide you with contractors, you know, basically virtual assistants for all kinds of tech-related things to do with your online business, and did a little internal promotion to see who was interested. And that turned out to be something that her audience really, really wanted. And she had a lot less resistance there. It seemed almost effortless to get clients there compared to how she was doing her coaching practice. So I haven't spoken to her recently, but I see all her work on Facebook. And I know her entire business now is basically around that aspect of building a team of contractors and then farming them out, or, you know, contracting them to other entrepreneurs, other small business people. And that's her business today. So it's moved away from coaching and teaching to services. And that wouldn't have happened without her getting the initial feedback from the audience, feeling like she was struggling in one area and then having much more flow momentum in another area just from a little experiment internally. So that's the sort of thing that can happen, I think, with anyone. And this, to me, is the most important point about all of this, is building the audience to get the insight from, you know, whether it's the audience saying, no, we don't want this, or an audience saying, we're really interested in learning how you did that, or we'd like to buy that from you. It's the audience that gives you the insight and the power to decide when to pivot, how to pivot, where to pivot to, or where to keep going and when to keep going.
Right. So this person you just mentioned clearly listened to the questions that people in her audience were asking her repeatedly, that gave her some cues that a new direction might be fruitful. But she needed to have that audience in order for the audience to even ask her those questions.
Right. It's hard to do this in a vacuum. You know, you can't just ask your friends and family members and maybe, you know, post on Facebook once or twice and come up with a conclusion for this. You really need to. I actually think the best answer is put offers out there. You know, actually say, I'm selling this now. Do you want to buy it? And that's the ultimate yes or no, right? Put money where your mouth is. That decides whether there's a potential viable business there.
Yeah, it certainly does. So I know you mentioned earlier that there are people, you know, people who get to the point where they seem to be hitting a roadblock or repeated roadblocks, and they start to get frustrated and don't pursue something long enough to see a positive outcome. Internally, how do you combat that negative feeling and constant questioning that goes on in your head so that you can pursue things long enough? And also at the same time, how do you develop an audience and the interaction with the audience with a positive mindset if you're feeling kind of down because things aren't working out?
Well, there are two aspects to it. One I already mentioned is making sure you're actually putting things in front of people. You know, if you never do that, don't draw any conclusions. So it's a tough one. I think that most of us, when you're an entrepreneur, you probably get more excited about whatever it is you're creating or selling and not so much the marketing, going out there and trying to find the customers of it. But that's what decides whether it works or not. So let's say you're putting in some effort to reach people and potentially test this thing you're doing. If you're doing that and maybe, you know, growth is slow or you're not getting any result, not making any sales, the most important thing, and I tell this certainly to all my coaching clients, because everyone, myself included, goes through that early period where the self-doubt is there. The lack of results means you just don't know whether it's going to work. And you can have all the positive self-talk and vision boards and, you know, belief and coaching and mentoring and forming mastermind groups. All of that's wonderful. But at the end of the day, what you really want to feel is that feel of a sale coming through, and then another one, and another one. So to get you to that point, I really believe in the power of celebrating little stepping stones towards momentum. And as long as they're continuing in the right direction, I really mean simple things. Like for a lot of my students, step one is basic. It's choosing a domain name, setting up a WordPress software to run a blog. For some people, you know, that's not even a challenge. It's something that gets done in 20 minutes and it's over with. Others, it might be something brand new to them. So it's still worth celebrating that as a success. Then you can look at milestones from that point forward. For my people, it's okay, blog is set up. First blog post goes up. First email goes out into the newsletter. First landing page goes up. First email subscriber. Boom. Huge, you know, point of success. So celebrate that first opt-in. Celebrate the 10, the 20, the 50, the 100. You know, each opt-in is a big thing. Each time you get some kind of exposure point. So a successful guest post, successful podcast interview like we're doing now, the first time you're interviewed, or even successful publishing your own podcast or your own YouTube video. So, you know, celebrate these milestone moments that do lead to momentum. But ultimately, there's only really one metric that will decide whether you're succeeding or failing is sales to deliver cash flow to fuel growth and obviously support you in your life. So everything is moving towards making that first sale. And that usually comes from increase of traffic, increase of email subscribers, and of course, putting offers out there. You know, you need to have something to sell. So it takes a while for some people to get to the point where they have a product or a service to sell. And once you start putting those pieces together, you know, all that is about celebrating the milestones to keep your emotional state congruent towards this direction. Now, then at some point, though, you're going to have an offer ready to go and you're going to be going out there and getting traffic in front of it. So that's when you can really say this is where, you know, rubber hits the road, so to speak. We're testing whether this works. And at that point, that's when I'd say, okay, countdown timer, you know, how many people have seen the offer? What kind of feedback are we getting? Are they buying, not buying? Why not? And at some point, you know, it might be 3 months, it might be 6 months. I personally don't think you can decide this within 6 months. I mean, 6 months is probably the bare minimum because it takes you that long to just do the groundwork to get the machine rolling. You can speed it up. If you got money to spend, you can throw some Facebook ads in front of an offer straight away and potentially start getting some feedback. You know, you got to line up a lot of pieces of the puzzle to get to some kind of conclusion. And on the flip side, I wouldn't want to see someone spend, you know, certainly 2 years is a long time to not have a sale. You know, 1 year you're already starting to think is I'm not heading in the right direction here. Assuming you've done that initial work and put an offer in front of people. And along the way, there's so many signposts. You know, it's your own emotional state. It's the success metrics for the business, of which I already mentioned many you can celebrate along the way. So it's a combination. And this is why I really believe in the importance of teaching mindset, not just, you know, the nuts and bolts of building the business, because it's the mindset that fuels the creation of the nuts and bolts. So you have to really focus on your head first. Otherwise, you won't get there. And for some people, you know, you'll find out pretty quickly. I've got some students in one of my memberships at the Laptop Lifestyle Academy who have, some of them have been there for a couple of years. And I see them go through this process of trying to choose a topic for their business. And it takes them a year to come to any kind of conclusion towards what they even want to focus on. Because this decision is not like just choosing the topic for the business. It's like choosing that, you know, when you're a kid and they ask you, what do you want to do with your life? It's kind of that level of a decision, because the kind of business I'm talking about with my people is, it's very much about, you know, what kind of thing they want to represent in the world. And they have to be associated with it and love it for years to come. So you're making a fairly significant decision. And, you know, it's not necessarily something, you're not just selling a widget here. You're selling your expertise, your beliefs, your knowledge, your passion through your content. So that's,
you know, pretty powerful.
Yeah. Different layer there to selling a nut or a bolt, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate the fact that you've actually mapped out the time frame and the fact that there are many small steps along the way, and it takes time, And you also have to have the right mindset to do it. I think that's really important for our audience to hear. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about, in your own journey, as you have developed various businesses, some that have probably been really successful and some not so much, what have been some of your best investments in help?
Okay, well, the number one help I've ever had, and I couldn't do anything without it, is technical support. So, you know, I like probably a lot of people, I started doing everything by myself. And I spent a good 5 years. I don't like to say it's wasted time, but it was slow, very, very slow. I could have been where I was in 5 years in 1 year if I just brought on a little bit of help to do with setting up my blog, setting up my website, setting up my email list, setting up my landing page, setting up my membership area where I deliver my products, you know, just those basic things. So I could have spent my time focused on my strengths, but no, I decided to learn how to install the scripts myself, try and code and design websites myself, which is not my strong point. So I did eventually learn that lesson. And, you know, for the last 12, 13 years, I've had tech people helping me. And it's by far the most important help I could get. Second to that would be the customer support help. Online business is interesting because a lot of people start looking at the dream of creating passive income from some kind of magic website that runs by itself. And then the reality kind of turns out to be that you're trying to run a show doing every single job in the business by yourself, which is the absolute opposite of passive income. You know, suddenly you're the writer, the advertiser, the CEO, the customer service person, the tech developer, the hirer. And that's just not passive income if you're trying to do all those things. So
hardly.
It's ironic because that's the image we have of the online business. And I promote it too. But the reality is you get people to take over certain roles that, A, you shouldn't do. And for me, the first taste of that was tech. The second aspect, and it happened a very similar time frame with my editing company back in the early 2000s, I was really big on coming up with nowadays we call it a 4-hour work week, thanks to Tim Ferriss. This is before Tim wrote his book. I was looking for something that would, you know, require a couple of hours a day of running. And that's what my editing company was meant to do. So to make that reality happen, I ended up hiring a friend of mine at university at the time to essentially just take over the email inbox. That's really what online customer service has been for all my businesses, including what I do today. It's managing an inbox. So if you, and I really believe for an online entrepreneur, you can do really well just with one tech person and one customer service person. If you want to have a fairly simple, elegant business that runs mostly without you, you might have to do, you know, the main aspect, the teaching, the writing, the interviewing, but the setting up of websites and the handling of customer day-to-day interactions, other people can do. So for me, when I had those two people in place, which I literally ran, you know, a business that did over $1 million over a few years just with those two contractors. And the great benefit of that was really high margins too. Like I remember talking to some of my friends who were running offline businesses, and they get excited about 30% profit margins from their company. And I was having 70, 80, 90% margins going, what are they spending all their money on? And of course, it's employees. And that's where it mostly goes to, or maybe rent and all the, you know, machinery and so on. So that's what I love about internet business. Yeah, the answer to your question, tech, customer support, you know, there's been some coaches and mentors along the way, especially just watching people do things in my industries and seeing how they do it. I'm really a big fan of sort of modeling what works. So I followed some people in that area and still do today. I think we all do. But that's been the most important. Nowadays, you know, my company's a bit bigger. I've got a project manager. I've got a graphic design person. I've got little spot jobs for things like transcriptionists and Facebook advertising specialist. But it all starts with getting those sort of day-to-day things out of your face so you can do what you're good at. In my case, I'm a content creator and a teacher.
Mm-hmm. So the moral of the story is, as you're building your business, constantly think about building it for other people to run it.
Yeah, I remember when I said I did it all by myself, and I first came across, I think it would have been Richard Schefren, and he wrote a book, or it was a free report, as part of his Strategic Profits company called the Internet Business Manifesto. And even as prior to that, I just remember asking myself the question, what am I doing each day that I could hand over to someone else that would get that work out of the way to do the stuff that I really want to do. Like, I like the idea of building something that is sellable and other people can run, but I think there's another layer to that. It's building something also that you personally want to have a role in. It depends on what your role is, because you can create something that potentially makes you a lot of money, but what do you do with all your time? Like, I had that experience with my editing company. I built a company that pretty much ran entirely without me, which left me with my entire day to sort of twiddle my thumbs. You know, I wasn't extremely wealthy, but my costs were covered and I had a business that ran itself. So I had to figure out what to do with my time. And that's when I realized, you know, my business is my hobby, is my enjoyment as well. So I need to find my role. And that's what I discovered through blogging, that writing is my enjoyment and being a content creator. So I think the better way to phrase it, especially if you love being an entrepreneur, is how to build a business to get the jobs that you're not good at out of your way so you can do the things you are good at.
That's great advice. Yarrow, whom do you know personally who is currently doing remarkable work?
I want to mention a person I recently interviewed and known for a while. His name's Hal Elrod. You might have heard of him. He's the author of The Miracle Morning. He wrote this book. It's an inspiring story. He had a car accident, which should have left him in a wheelchair, but he has an amazing positive attitude. And he went on to come up with this system, very basic things you can do in the morning that can literally, you know, rejig your life and get you going. And I think I love the simplicity of his message. So Hal Elrod and The Miracle Morning, a book worth grabbing, and or any of his interviews, have a listen to him.
That's great. And now going back to you, Yarrow, what are you working on now? What's exciting? What do we have to look forward to in the near future?
It's funny we're talking about systems, because I'm planning the next 12 months to remove myself from things I thought I never would remove myself from, including managing my email list. For anyone who's an internet marketer, usually your most prized possession is that email list. And it's something I've never done in my business, is actually have someone else send emails for me and kind of like be the writer, since I see myself as the writer. I personally want to take a step towards a new writing project called The Change Manifesto. And it's not so much about business as it is about more personal development and changing all aspects of your life. And I want to write a book around that area, a blog, podcast, and really build a platform around that subject. But I don't want to stop my current business. So I'm actually focusing now on building a few more people into the team to essentially see if this can run without me doing anything besides maybe creating, you know, a course every now and then. But all the launch campaigns, all the marketing, all the writing, all the emails are actually managed by someone else. That's what I'm planning and spending my time for the next 12 months while I move towards this new Change Manifesto project.
Sounds like a great project, and sounds it has its challenges too.
It's a fun one.
Yarrow, how can listeners learn more about you and follow what you're up to?
The simplest answer is just to Google my name, Yarrow, Y-A-R-O. Not too many people have my name, and it should be the first or second result in Google. You'll find my blog, my podcast, my free report, the Blog Profits Blueprint. Everything is there, just Y-A-R-O.
Great. Yarrow, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. It's been a really fascinating discussion about entrepreneurship, how you smash the plateau, how you deal with the plateau. So thank you so much for coming on the show today. My guest today has been Yarrow Starak, author of the Blog Profits Blueprint and founder of the entrepreneursjourney.com blog. Thank you again, Yarrow, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. What has your experience been getting help when you've hit a plateau? What would you like to learn through this podcast that would give you the support you need? Let's continue the discussion. Connect with me on LinkedIn and Twitter. And please share this episode with your colleagues and friends. It would also help a great deal if you would write a review on iTunes so that new people can find us. I hope you've enjoyed what you've learned. I know your time is precious, and I want to thank you for spending some of it with us today.